We're in Judges chapter 19. I think I told you last week or sometime, I don't remember when I told you, but I think I told you at some point that this book has just kind of worn on my soul as I've been going through it, reading it, and seeing what the people of Israel are, what they've become. And this week was a new low in terms of what we read, what we're going to read today, but also just in my soul. It's just the story we're going to look at today really affected my soul this week. You'll see why when we get into the story. I've told you before that this book is really a book about the Canaanization of Israel. And as we go through the book, what we are seeing is people who are supposed to be the people of God living like the people of Canaan. And they basically have become Canaanites. I've told you that this book is about what you see centrally in this book is depravity. And depravity, for those that don't know, is complete, thorough corruption of the human character. It's what the scripture says we are by nature. We're depraved by nature. This story today is a picture of that. It's just utter depravity, is what it is. I told you earlier that if Judges were a movie, it would be rated R. Never more are you going to see that than today, and what we're going to see. Matthew talked to me this morning. He said, "Dad, today's the day." And I said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "You remember when you first started Judges, I told you, I want to see what you have to say about Judges chapter 19. Mm-hmm. And so today, I'm looking forward to what you're going to say about this." So he's looking forward to it more than I am, I think. Everyone does what is right in his own eyes. That's the judgment that the writer of Judges has given on the people of Israel. That's how they live. They do what's right in their own eyes. The last couple of weeks, we saw a story about the tribe of Dan. And the tribe of Dan, it was the story of the beginning of idolatry in the northern kingdom, which isn't a northern kingdom at this time. It's actually still all, not even a kingdom, because there's no king. But it's still all Israel right now. But it's the beginning of idolatry in Dan. The rest of the book, starting today, chapters 19, 20, and 21, are going to be focusing on a totally different tribe, and it's a completely different story. So just in your mind, break from last week. Last week ended that story. We begin a new story. This story is going to center on the tribe of Benjamin. Okay, let's read. Chapter 19, verses 1 through 10. In those days, when there was no king in Israel, a certain Levite was sojourning in the remote parts of the hill country of Ephraim, who took to himself a concubine from Bethlehem in Judah. And his concubine was unfaithful to him, and she went away from him to her father's house at Bethlehem in Judah, and was there some 4 months. Then her husband arose and went after her to speak kindly to her and bring her back. He had with him his servant and a couple of donkeys. And she brought him into her father's house. And when the girl's father saw him, he came with joy to meet him. And his father-in-law, the girl's father, made him stay, and he remained with him 3 days. So they ate and drank and spent the night there. And on the fourth day, they arose early in the morning, and he prepared to go. But the girl's father said to his son-in-law, "Strengthen your heart with a morsel of bread, and after that you may go." So the two of them sat and ate and drank together. And the girl's father said to the man, "Be pleased to spend the night, and let your heart be merry." And when the man rose up to go, his father-in-law pressed him, till he spent the night there again. And on the fifth day, he arose early in the morning to depart, and the girl's father said, "Strengthen your heart, and wait until the day declines." So they ate, both of them. And when the man and his concubine and his servant rose up to depart, his father-in-law, the girl's father, said to him, "Behold, now the day has waned toward evening. Please spend the night. Behold, the day draws to its close. Lodge here and let your heart be merry, and tomorrow you shall rise early in the morning for your journey and go home." But the man would not spend the night. He rose up and departed and arrived opposite Jebus, that is, Jerusalem. He had with him a couple of saddled donkeys and his concubine with him. We'll stop there. So we're beginning a new story. And we have a Levite from Ephraim. So if you look at the map there, you can see that Ephraim's kind of right in the middle. It's a region. It's not a city. It's one of the 12 tribes. It's right along the line in the middle of the map, running horizontal. And so the man is from that region where you see Ephraim. And he took to himself a concubine. It's sort of like a second-class wife. That's kind of what a concubine was, something like that. And she was from Bethlehem in Judah. And so if you go from Ephraim south, you'll see Bethlehem. It's just south of Jerusalem. And so that's where she's from. Now, the woman is unfaithful, it says. Literally, the Hebrew says she played the prostitute. And so she's playing the prostitute, and she runs off. And eventually, she winds up at her family's house. She's where her father is. She goes back to Bethlehem. And after 4 months, her husband decides to go get her. I guess he must have figured, somehow he figured where she was. Maybe he got messenger or something. "Hey, your wife's in Bethlehem. Did you know that? She's staying with her dad." "Oh, okay." And so he decides he's going to go get her and talk kindly to her and bring her back. So he goes. And he stays in his father-in-law's house 3 days. The father-in-law's really welcoming. You can tell he's a hospitality guy. I mean, he won't let him go. And it's time to leave after 3 days. And so the Levite, the religious leader, Levites were religious leaders, remember, kind of like a pastor. He gets up and says, "It's time for me to go home now." And the father-in-law says, no, sit, have lunch, stay. Here, let me kill the goat. We'll have some goat stew today." And of course, it's not like going to a hotel and having continental breakfast and you're done in 10 minutes. It's a different culture, different deal. They got to kill the goat. They got to prepare the goat. They got to cook the goat. Then you eat the goat, and then when you do it, there's goat and there's cheese and there's wine and it's a big deal. And you sit and you talk and you recline and so this is an involved thing in the culture. And so he stays for lunch, and lunch turns late into the afternoon, and they're done. But now it's kind of getting kind of late to start out. So the father-in-law says, just stay another night. No problem. So he stays another night. The next day, same thing. Stay, eat, have lunch with us, la-da-da. And he's probably thinking, we needed to get going yesterday. But the culture, he's sort of socially obligated to say yes, to accept the invitation. But he doesn't really want to accept the invitation. But it's also, this is my father-in-law. And so there's probably some of that in there too. And he decides, okay, we'll stay for lunch. And lunch turns into late in the afternoon. And so stay the night. And he stays the night. And so now we're on the fifth day. And we get the same story again. Stay, eat lunch. And okay. And so he eats lunch. And on the fifth day, same story. Well, just it's getting late. You can't start now. The evening's coming soon. Just stay the night. And he decides enough is enough. It's time to go. No, really, thank you for your hospitality, but we need to go. And so he sets off, but it's late in the day. And so he's not going to be able to make the full journey all the way up to Ephraim from Bethlehem in Judah. And so, let's read some more. I'm going to start in verse 10 again. But the man would not spend the night. He rose up and departed and arrived opposite Jebus, that is, Jerusalem. He had with him a couple of saddled donkeys, and his concubine was with him. When they were near Jebus, the day was nearly over, and the servant said to his master, "Come now, let's turn aside to this city of the Jebusites and spend the night in it." And his master said to him, "We will not turn aside into the city of foreigners who do not belong to the people of Israel, but we will pass on to Gibeah." And he said to his young man, "Come, let us draw near to one of these places and spend the night at Gibeah or at Ramah." So they passed on and went their way. And the sun went down on them near Gibeah, which belongs to Benjamin. And they turned aside there to go in and spend the night at Gibeah. And he went in and sat down in the open square of the city, for no one took them into his house to spend the night. So, this man, his wife, his servant, and a couple of donkeys are now traveling north from Bethlehem in Judah, which you see on the map, up to Ephraim, which you see on the map, which is his home. And to get there, they have to pass Jerusalem. So they get to Jerusalem, which at that time was called Jebus because the Jebusites lived there. It was not a Jewish town at the time. And they reach Jerusalem. It's getting late because they got a late start. It's about 5 miles, 5 mile trip from Bethlehem to Jebus, Jerusalem. And the servant says, "Hey, let's stay the night here." And the Levite says, "No, bad neighborhood. Let's not stay there. These are foreigners. There's no telling what they would do. They don't belong to God. We might not be safe there. Let's keep moving. Let's go on to Gibeah, or maybe to Ramah." Now, if you look on your map, Gibeah is not on your map, but if you see Jerusalem and you go northwest and you see Gibeon, Gibeah is in between Jerusalem and Gibeon. It's about 3.5 miles further on from Jerusalem. Ramah is another couple miles beyond Gibeah. And so he's saying, "Well, let's see how far we can make it, you know. Well, let's at least go to Gibeah, that's in Benjamin, and or to Ramah, that's also in Benjamin, and we'll get to where we get, and when it's time to stop, we'll stop, and that's what we're going to do." And so they move on. They don't stop in that wicked city of the Jebusites. And they make it to Gibeah in the region of Benjamin as the sun is going down. And so it's time to stop traveling. And so they need a place to stay, but no one will take them in. And so they're kind of sitting in the square, in the open square in the middle of the city, to make it sort of obvious that, hey, we're travelers, we need a place to stay. But no one will give them a place to stay. And in this culture, this is actually a pretty serious offense. You were expected to help travelers. It's kind of like today in Alaska, they actually have a law in Alaska that you are, by law, required to stop for stranded motorists. If you don't, you could actually be arrested. And if you sort of think about it, you can see why. In Alaska, if you're a stranded motorist and night comes and it gets 60 below, you're not going to live. And so they require you to stop for stranded motorists in Alaska. It's, and up there, that's the culture. It's expected. Well, it's this, that's the kind of thing here. It'd be kind of like not stopping for a stranded motorist in Alaska. And so, but no one will take them in. And so, verse 16. And behold, an old man was coming from his work in the field at evening. The man was from the hill country of Ephraim, and he was sojourning in Gibeah. The men of the place were Benjamites. And he lifted up his eyes and saw the traveler in the open square of the city. And the old man said, "Where are you going? Where do you come from?" And he said to him, "We're passing from Bethlehem in Judah to the remote parts of the hill country of Ephraim, from which I come. I went to Bethlehem in Judah, and I'm going to the house of the Lord. But no one has taken me into his house. We have straw and feed for our donkeys, with bread and wine for me and your female servant and the young man with your servants. There's no lack of anything." The old man said, "Peace be to you. I will care for all your wants. Only do not spend the night in the square." So he brought him into his house and gave the donkeys feed, and they washed their feet and ate and drank. So they've been sitting in the square, and an old farmer walks into town. He's been working in the fields all day. The day is done. He's coming back to his house, and so he enters the town. He sees these guys in the square, and he starts talking to them. "Hey, where are you coming from? Where are you going?" And they tell him. And then the Levite says, verse 18, "No one's taken us in." That's like a slap in the face to this town. And what makes it worse is verse 19. "We got our own food. We got our own food for our donkeys and for ourselves. You don't have to feed us. We just need a place to sleep. That's all." I mean, normally you would the host would actually feed them and so on. But he's saying, "Well, you don't even need to do that. Just let us have a place to stay. We're okay." The old farmer, he says, basically, "Don't worry, I got you. Come stay with me." So they do. And they stay with the old man, and he makes them dinner, and so on. And verse 22. As they were making their hearts merry, behold, the men of the city, worthless fellows, surrounded the house, beating on the door. And they said to the old man, the master of the house, "Bring out the man who came into your house, that we may know him." And the man, the master of the house, went out to them and said to them, "No, my brothers, do not act so wickedly. Since this man has come into my house, do not do this vile thing. Behold, here are my virgin daughter and his concubine. Let me bring them out now. Violate them. Do with them what seems good to you, but against this man do not do this outrageous thing." But the men would not listen to him. So the man seized his concubine and made her go out to them. And they knew her and abused her all night until the morning. And as the dawn began to break, they let her go. And as morning appeared, the woman came and fell down at the door of the man's house where her master was until it was light. Well, my. And you're thinking, did that just say what I thought it said? Yeah, that just said what you thought it said. I think this may be the most vile scene in all of Scripture, in one sense.
Oh my God.
I didn't know what that was.
The most vile scene in all of Scripture.
I wasn't looking. I just heard him say that, and then I heard interesting providence.
The so the men of Gibeah have surrounded this house for the purpose of having sex with the Levite. That's what know him means in verse 22. That's an idiom. It's a Hebrew idiom for sexual relations. What they want is homosexual rape. That's what they're saying. Send him out to us. We're going to rape him. And the old man says, no, don't do this vile thing. He's my guest. Here, take my daughter. Take his wife. Violate them. That's what he said. Now, this vile thing that he's talking about involves a whole bunch of stuff. One, obviously, is it involves homosexuality, which was morally forbidden. One of them is sexual relations outside of marriage, which is also morally forbidden. And one of them is, this isn't how you treat guests. And so he's violating all of these different things, all in one. And you can't separate those things out. It's a package deal. And I, first of all, this is unimaginable to me. I cannot imagine, first, the desire for homosexual rape that the men are saying that they want to do. And secondly, I cannot imagine the response of the old farmer and the response of the Levite when they say, don't do this vile thing, but here, do this vile thing instead. Because that's what they do. I mean, verse 24, he says, violate them. Do with them what seems good to you. I mean, do you hear that? These are men who are supposed to protect women, who are, that's part of what it means to be a man, is to protect women. These aren't men. Now, I don't really think they believe what they're doing is right, necessarily. I think they're desperate because the house is surrounded and it's like 100 of them and 3 of us. And they're just counting it up, you know. We got 3. You know, can we take them? No, we can't take them. What are we going to do? And somehow, by some warped logic, they see that the rape of these women is somehow less vile than the rape of the man would be. And keep in mind that the woman, the wife, is also a visitor. She's also a guest. And the Levite, you know, that spiritual, religious pastor guy, that guy, that's what Levites were. Look what he does. This is the guy who will not stop at the Jebusite city because those wicked, vile people live in the Jebusite city. He opens the door and he takes his wife and he shoves her out there. He throws her out to those men like a piece of meat to the dogs. That's basically what he does. And he closes the door. Yeah, the pastor guy did that. And verse 25 just makes me shudder. It says they knew her and abused her all night. To know is sexual relations. They raped her. And they raped her all night long. This is gang rape. Guys, this story is Sodom. You can't help but see Sodom in this story. It's the same plot. It's the same kind of stuff that happens. From the request for homosexual rape to the, no, here, let me offer my daughters, to the only thing different is in Sodom, the guys in the house get rescued by the angels. Here, there's no rescue. Now, this is Israel. Israel has become Sodom. The Canaanization of Israel is complete, guys. She's just as bad as Sodom was. There is no difference between them. If you adopt an ungodly culture and follow the path on down the line, you're going to behave like an ungodly culture. If you abandon God, God is going to give you over to your abandoning Him. That's Romans 1. That's Israel in the days of the judges. Now, let's finish this part of the story and then talk. Verse 27. Her master rose up in the morning, and when he opened the doors of the house and went out to go on his way, behold, there was his concubine lying at the door of the house with her hands on the threshold. He said to her, "Get up, let's be going." But there was no answer. Then he put her on the donkey, and the man rose up and went away to his home. And when he entered his house, he took a knife. And taking hold of his concubine, he divided her, limb by limb, into 12 pieces, and sent her throughout all the territory of Israel. And all who saw it said, "Such a thing has never happened or been seen from the day that the people of Israel came up out of the land of Egypt until this day. Consider it. Take counsel and speak." So next morning, the sun is shining, the birds are chirping, and the Levite says, "Oh, rise and shine, it's time to get going. We need to move on. We got to make it to Ephraim today." And he opens up the door to get his wife, and there she is, lying right there on the porch. And he says, "Hey, get up, let's go." You can see he lacks some compassion. And she doesn't answer. It doesn't say she's dead. She might be dead. But she's certainly dead by the end of the story, if she's not dead here. And so she doesn't answer, but he's got to move on. We got to make it to Ephraim. So he takes her and throws her onto his donkey, kind of like as if she was a sack of barley. Just throw her over the donkey. Let's get going. And they make the trip. And they go from Gibeah up to his home that day. I'm sure he had lots of time to think on that trip as they're walking up to Ephraim. And he decides what he's going to do. And he takes a knife and he cuts his wife up into 12 different pieces, one piece for each of the 12 tribes of Israel. And he sends his wife sort of by parcel post, all over Israel. He probably has a messenger going with each piece. And it probably went something like this. The messenger arrives in Manasseh, the tribe, that's one of the tribes, with an arm. And the messenger probably tells the people of Manasseh the story. This arm belonged to the wife of my master, and they went into the town of Gibeah. And he tells the story that we just went over. And then another messenger goes down to Judah, and he says, this leg belonged to the wife of my master. And we went into the town of Gibeah in Benjamin, and this is what happened. And so these pieces of her body are going all over Israel with a message. And the Levite is basically saying to the tribes of Israel, what you going to do about this? That's what he's doing. It's like he's throwing down the glove. That's an idiom in English. I probably shouldn't have used it. It means, what you going to do about this? You're just going to stand there and let the people of Gibeah do this? Or are you going to do something? And everybody says, who sees it, we have never seen anything like this before in all of Israel. And that's true. I've never seen anything like this. And you will never see anything like this in all of Scripture outside of here either. Now let's talk. This story is depravity. This is a biblical picture of the human race being the human race. This is what the human race looks like when God gets thrown out the window. What happens is every man does what is right in his own eyes. And the writer is saying, that's what Israel has become. They abandoned God, and they became this. They became Sodom. They are no better than Sodom was. That's what he's saying. Every character in this story is corrupt, including the victims. Everyone is warped. There is no good character in this story. You have warped people abusing warped people. You're seeing Canaan. This is what they would do in Canaan. This is how you would expect this in Canaan. They worship the Baals. But you should not expect this in Israel. Except that, you know what? They worship the Baals too. They've abandoned God. Israel is Canaan. That's what they've become. Guys, apart from Christ, this is what the human race is like. We're broken. And this depravity, biblical doctrine of depravity, is as ancient as Judges chapter 19. It's actually older than that. Goes back to Adam. You see it in Romans chapter 1, the verses that I gave you. And if you actually read the whole chapter of chapter 1 is depravity illustrated. Just, I would challenge you to go home and read not just those verses, but the whole chapter, and see what society was like in Paul's day, which is 1,200 years or so after the story we read. But lest we sort of get our sort of judgmental attitudes and look down on those ancient folks about how bad they were, this is like reading the news. I mean, this week we had shootings in Dallas for police officers, right? You know what that is? That's depravity. That's what that is. We had shootings in an Orlando nightclub. That's depravity. That's what that is. We have, in America, we have about 1 million abortions a year. That's depravity. 1 million a year. China has theirs too. We have an epidemic of divorce in the West. That's depravity. You're just seeing the symptoms of depravity. That's all that is. Recently, India, they had a gang rape of a woman. I don't know if you saw the story, but there was a big thing about it. That's depravity. That's this story today. It goes on today. Prostitution, drug addiction, alcoholism, greed, lust, it's depravity is what it is. It's why you see what you see in this story, and it's why you see what you see every time you turn on the news. What we read in Judges could very well have been yesterday's news. Because America isn't any better. But let's move beyond cultural sins for a moment, because I've been talking cultural a lot. What about you and me? I mean, I'm not asking if you're going to engage in homosexual rape. I don't think you are. I'm not. And so in one way, it's kind of dangerous, this, because we don't see ourselves in this sin. We say, I wouldn't do that. That's for those bad guys. Because I wouldn't be that bad. But you know what? Do you do what's right in your own eyes? Because that's the problem here in Judges. They did what was right in their own eyes. How about you? Do you do what's right in your own eyes? It may not look like this in Judges. I hope it doesn't. But is it the same kind of attitude that produced this? Do you do what your culture does just because it's what the culture does? Guys, we don't look to our culture for guidance on how to live. Don't look to America for guidance on how to live. Don't look at what everybody does and say, oh, they do that, and so we need to do that. That was Israel's problem. They looked all around them and see what the Canaanites do and wanted to be just like them. That's not what you want. Don't say, well, our culture says it's okay to live together out of wedlock, so we'll do it. No, don't do that. Don't go there. Don't say, my culture is pushing me to basically give my life to my degree. And you work and you work and your degree is your life. Because that's what the culture pushes. Don't go there. We don't get our cues from a culture. Go to Scripture. We look to Christ, and we look to Scripture. And here's the deal. When we do that, Christ rescues us from ourselves. I was talking to a girl. This was some years ago. Actually, right in that room, right over there. She was from France, and she was an atheist. And we just got to talking about the Bible, and I was telling her, I was starting with the story of the Bible, and I began in the beginning. I said, God created this world and made us for himself. And she said, if God made this world, why is there so much evil in it? Because she looks around and she sees the news. And I talked about the fall. And I said, well, God made us for himself, but the human race chose to sin and go its own way. And we basically have abandoned God. And consequently, this world is broken. And she said, well, why doesn't he do something about it? And I said, he has. That's what Christ is about. Christ is about God doing something about our sin, about our doing what's right in our own eyes. See, Jesus wants to take your brokenness and restore it to wholeness. And that's what he does. He takes broken people and makes them whole again. That's what the cross is about. It's for sinners. Jesus said he came for sinners. He didn't come for righteous people. He came for you and me. Let's close in prayer.